Real Money Radio is brought to you today by Holland Financial. Since 1997, David Holland and his team have helped hundreds of investors plan their financial futures. Planning doesn't have to be hard, complicated, or stressful. Come see how simple and clear your future can be when you plan stronger. The consultation is free. Call 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. So the guest today, itching to talk to you today, and I'm very glad to welcome him back. He has been on our program before. Wall Street Journal Senior Editor, CFO Journal, Maxwell Murphy. Max, welcome back to the program.
Hi, thanks. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it's good to have you. I know that you're anxious to talk with me, and we started talking. I'm like, hold on, Max. My listeners need to hear all that fascinating stuff. So Max, Max is at the Wall Street Journal. He is a Senior Editor, CFO Journal, and what's the website, Max, for the best source for people to follow your work?
You would want to go to blogs.wsj.com/CFO. You can also find it fairly easily from the wsj.com.
Okay, wsj.com.
Website on your...
Okay, cool. And so I asked Max, actually Max reached out to us, which was really good. He got back in touch with us to talk a little bit about what's going on in Venezuela. So before I get into that, Max is a very accomplished journalist and editor. He joined the Wall Street Journal in 2011, previously an equities columnist and reporter for 12 years with Dow Jones Newswire, degree in American Studies, University of Notre Dame, and Best Business Reporting Newswire, New York Press Club, June 2009. And Best Columnist 2003 Dow Jones Newswire Award. So again, welcome back, Max. So what in the world is going on in Venezuela?
Well, I don't know. Who knows? Nobody knows. And the deal sort of is, it's exactly that. It's, you know, every country has its own currency issues if you do business in local currency. And they also have their own laws and their own rules about how you do business in their country. And so that's hard for a CFO to navigate in general, or hard for any kind of company to navigate. But increasingly, markets like Venezuela are where companies want to go for growth. I mean, there's hyperinflation there. There is civil unrest. There is a very odd system of government in terms of what U.S. companies are used to doing business with. But at the same time, there are firms like the Herbalife of the world, the Nature Sunshines of the world, these multi-level marketing companies where, because of that unemployment, because of that inflation, Venezuelan people want to become representatives of these companies, you know, Avon too. But then when you do business there, it's among the haves and the have-nots. There's, depending on who you talk to, it's either 6.8 bolivars to the dollar or it's 70. On the black market, it's 70. For Avon, it's 50. For some companies, it's 11. And for, ostensibly, the currency is pegged at 6.8. And so, really, it's tough to navigate, but you have these companies that are already there. I don't know that many companies would go do business there now.
Well, that's
the
question.
Companies that are already there, what are they going to do? They don't want to just abandon ship and leave all their monetary assets behind, never to be seen again.
Well, and we've seen companies have to, you know, adjust their balance sheets, and it's hitting their earnings. That you've got Ford, who had to take a big hit, some $300 million. Coca-Cola took a $247 million charge. All of this because of simply the change in the exchange rate between the dollar and their currency, the bolivar.
That's exactly right. And that also, you know, it brings up an interesting point about the way that companies have to account for things. So it makes sense that Coca-Cola and Ford have to revalue their assets from bolivars to dollars so that they can report in U.S. dollars for their mostly U.S. shareholders on the U.S. exchanges and the U.S. Securities and Exchange Commission. But, you know, foreign companies or even companies that wouldn't mind having their money tied up in Venezuela because they're having a good time there in terms of, like, multi-level marketing, like I said, they are having to revalue it, and it's technically a quote-unquote non-cash charge, but it also at the same time means that someday down the road,
right,
let's call it $500 million U.S. dollars that you thought you had in your Venezuelan operation, it's now and forever probably about $100 million. And how you deal with that is up to you, and I don't know that these companies even know how to deal with it. I mean, how do you deal with that?
That's the question. I mean, because, you know, the thing with currencies that I've always, you know, looked at, Max, is that, you know, it's if you've got a devaluation, a falling value of your currency, you know, and I always very often talk about the U.S. dollar and talk about inflation and or devaluation of our currency. If the U.S. dollar falls in value, meaning that we have inflation in the United States, you could have that either internally or versus the foreign currencies. So let's just say, for example, that the U.S. dollar were to go to, instead of being around $1.37, $1.38 to buy a euro, let's say it took $2 to buy a euro. Well, that's going to affect the value of the dollar, obviously, and how much it can buy of foreign stuff. But if you're spending your dollars within the United States, then you have, you know, what's the value of your dollar spent here versus what it's worth when you take it overseas. So I use that as an example, Max, because if that's the case, if those dollars or the bolivars stay in country and these companies are able to use them in country and not have to bring them back out, then, you know, without having to translate it. So somehow the company's strategies have to be to do something. I don't know. Maybe they end up using those monies to buy retirement retreats for all their executives. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's a funny thing because there's a whole lot of issues that you touched on, but you can broadly, and it's not very complicated, but it's just a whole lot of moving parts. This idea that no company, to do your fiduciary duty, you don't want to bring your money from overseas where it's only been taxed at, let's say, 20%, and that's being generous. Some places it's much less than that. You don't want to bring it back and pay the extra 15% or more to gross up to the U.S. statutory tax. That's not doing your fiduciary duty. So there are some companies that are able to use that money overseas to actually invest in operations. There are some companies that are just sitting on it because there's really no reason that they need $3 billion in Ireland. You know, that's one issue, but then you've got the currency. The way that most CFOs that we found have dealt with it is they try and get everything back into their home currency.
I mean,
there's a lot of ways it used to be that you would take out hedging contracts.
Right.
You would make these sort of Byzantine bets on at least you would get some sort of currency band where you wouldn't get harmed beyond a certain point, but you wouldn't get helped beyond a certain point, depending on the currency swings. But now the whole dynamic has changed, and companies are looking for more natural, organic types of hedges. Build it where you sell it.
Right.
If you have a unit in Germany, or if you have, you know, if you a unit in Switzerland, you might want to move it to Germany to get from, you know, Swiss francs to euros. Or if you have a unit in the Ukraine, get that to Germany and become more of a take advantage of other countries' more territorial and lower tax rates. But then you have these weird one-off situations like the Ukraine or like Argentina, which is down about 30% or 40% over the past year. And Argentina is such a great market for a lot of American companies. And Venezuela isn't even bad, but in Venezuela, there's no telling what they're going to do tomorrow. And you have no control over that, and you will do as they say. In Argentina, it's more of a normal market force, but they're experiencing unbelievable hyperinflation. And companies that are doing business there are realizing that they either can't sell unless they're willing to accept Argentinian pesos, which nobody wants,
right?
Or they kind of, you know, go without those sales. And really, I don't mean to hem and haw, or no pun intended, to hedge, but
right.
There are situations that CFOs sort of say, if you want to be in that market, that's what you've got to put up with, because this is a bad year for the Argentine peso, but one year, you know, down the road, it might go up 15%, and then you'll see a company say, hey, you know, foreign exchange was a tailwind for us instead of a headwind, and we got 10 cents a share because the Argentine peso went up. Venezuela is a different animal. But most other countries, you can at least say, you know, it's going down now, but maybe it'll go up at some point in the future.
Max, that's an interesting take. It's the epitome of buying low, buying low, hoping to sell high later. Because, you know, obviously, when we've seen the dollar falling against other currencies, you know, and U.S. companies bring that money back from overseas and they get the benefit of the positive exchange rate, and that boosts the profit that they're able to report back here at home. maybe that's the strategy, that, you know, instead of trying to bring it back, they continue to reinvest and build it until the tide turns, so to speak, and those the Venezuelan currency, you know, doesn't about face.
Or any currency.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the rub, because if I told you that the Argentine peso was up 40% this year, most of the money that U.S. companies have in Argentina, yes, they would get a benefit, a non-cash benefit to their earnings in terms of translation. They would report a better earnings, but they're not bringing it back because the tax code needs reform.
Right.
So every issue every road that we go down, it's sort of going to come back eventually to, well, if our tax code was better, except for Venezuela. Again, Venezuela is not the same as, the old days. Which one of these things is different than the other?
Which one doesn't belong?
From Electric Company or Sesame Street or whatever was. You know, Venezuela is the lone actor in terms of this kind of situation. But no matter where the money was, companies aren't bringing it back because 35%, if they don't have to pay it, they're going to do their fiduciary duty and not pay it.
Interesting stuff, Max. Maxwell Murphy, Wall Street Journal, senior editor, CFO Journal. We're going to grab a quick break. We'll come back. I want to get your take on what this means for investors, Max. Stay right there.
Okay.
When it comes to finding an advisor you can trust, are you unsure of the questions to ask? David Holland has written a book that can help, and it's called How to Get Great Advice and Avoid Scams. David has crammed his experience and insider knowledge about advisors and how they operate into this popular book. Visit Amazon.com to order your copy today. Or if you'd like to meet one-on-one with David to discuss your financial goals and concerns, he'll give you a free copy of his book when you meet. There's no cost or obligation. The number to call for your appointment with David is 671-PLAN or visit planstronger.com.
Welcome back. We have Maxwell Murphy, returning guest on the line with us, Wall Street Journal senior editor, CFO Journal. We're talking about the Venezuela Bolivar and how it is dropping like a rock, and even getting a firm number on it depends on who you're talking to. And Max, you know, I have a general, and it's a bias. It's simply a bias. And I always tell people this when I work with them and invest their money, that I'm reluctant to go into South America, Latin America, for this reason that we're talking about, with some of the volatility or extreme volatility and some of the risks that are associated with Venezuela and some of the other countries that, so I don't tend to recommend loading up on these countries, even though they can do well at times. But what you're, you know, kind of really pulling the curtain back on is, even if we are careful from a risk standpoint to put money into these countries, investing in companies directly there, multinationals and large U.S. companies are, you know, they do have an exposure there. I even saw Procter & Gamble, which you wouldn't even think Procter & Gamble would have an exposure, and they took a hit.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, Procter & Gamble, it's funny you bring them up. They, when the Turkey devalued the lira, I want to say it was about a decade ago. Don't hold me to that, but they devalued the lira, and Procter & Gamble took a huge hit. I mean, you don't normally think about it, But there are no companies that make things the way that Procter & Gamble does in developing emerging market nations. And because Procter & Gamble has a desire to sell in every country in the entire world and has the wherewithal to do it, they're pretty much everywhere. And I guess you said, let's talk about, I mean, I shouldn't be giving any investment advice, and I won't.
Right.
But I do think that that a person should look at the idea that it all balances out. It should all balance out, because for every currency that's up, another one should be down. and while we might be, we have over the past year, I think I did the checking on my terminal, and something like 25 emerging market currencies are down at least 7 or 8% over the past years, some as much as 20 or 30 or even more, 40%, and that's kind of unusual, and hopefully that's not the new normal. But in a free market system around the world, you would think that, okay, well, only like 5 are up, like the Canadian dollar and the Swiss franc and the euro are up, so maybe next year we'll have the 5 that are up will be down. but the rest of the currencies will be up. I mean, you never can tell, but you have to sort of realize that it's a little bit anomalous. It's totally out of the company's control, and it's totally out of your control. So you either try and tell them, if you're an investor, stop being in that market because you're not doing it well, or we trust you that this will reverse itself and you're right to be in that market.
Boy, it sure makes a case, Max, for being diversified. And I tell you what also it makes a case for. It reminds me a lot of when we had the bond and mortgage meltdown and housing meltdown about, you know, diversification and having, you know, enough bonds. If you have enough bonds, hey, it's okay, even if they're not that well rated and these things all work out. And it strikes very hard that these countries are called emerging markets for a reason.
Indeed.
Absolutely. You know, they're not developed as much, that the systems are not as strong. And you made a comment before the break about, you know, the Venezuelan government being able to, you know, pretty much handpick who gets a favorable exchange rate.
Well, sure. I mean, are you a food company? Well, maybe you're a multi-level marketer who makes vitamins.
Right.
So you're a food company. Why is that? But you are. But you make, you know, skin so soft, and you're not essential to our government, so you're going to pay 50 to the one. I mean, it's so arbitrary, and that's why it's sort of a one-off. And I would say that it's very important to CFOs who either do or want to do business in Venezuela to pay attention to that situation. But I the point that you bring up, the overarching point that people should walk away with, is that we are now, for better and for worse, a globally interconnected economy. And as China starts to take steps to stop pegging the yuan so violently to the dollar within such a short band, and countries continue to do more and more import-export business between themselves, I mean, there's really no way around it unless we want to have some sort of Star Trek-like global currency. And I don't see how the people of the Earth can agree on things a lot simpler than that. So I don't think they're ever going to agree on that.
No, I think that's ambitious, but it is very interesting to think through that. And you know, I was reading an article recently about the trade gap for the U.S. and the sheer magnitude of exports and imports and billions of dollars. And you go, good grief. So there, I agree completely, Max. There is this increasing kind of like laying down layers of a floor, you know, it's just more and more. And that stuff is just, you know, we have these regional or geopolitical conflicts like we're seeing in Ukraine. And then you look down beneath everything, there's the businesses, and you see this with Germany's hesitation for their involvement, coming from the business community. So, you know, as more and more businesses are so interconnected and interlaced, we really have truly a global economy.
It's true, and I mean, I don't know if this is a good example or it's going to kind of date me and make it sound a little bit cheesy, but Coca-Cola, their slogan for so many years was, I'd like to buy the world of Coke. But that was also kind of their business model. Like, I believe that past generations of Coke management, I mean, I don't know this for sure, I wasn't in on the board meetings, obviously, but that their goal was to sell a Coca-Cola to every human being on the planet, come what may. I think that is still their goal. I don't know. I haven't talked to Mukhtar Kent recently, but that I believe that would... Why would you not... If you have a product that people like in this country and you have the scale to sell it in every country on Earth to every human being, well, then you would want to do that where it makes sense. And certain countries, certain policies, certain regimes, it's not always going to be a good idea, but the ultimate goal, I think, of every multinational company, not just U.S., but across the world, the goal would be, how do I put one of my products or more in every single person's hand, or every single company's hand, if you do business to business,
right?
Make jet engines. Like, how do I make sure that every plane has my engine around the world? I mean, that would seem to be the ultimate goal, but it also does mean that you've got to be a much better risk manager than you were in the past, because the risks do mount. The more countries you go to, the more currencies you're exposed to.
Very interesting, Max. Maxwell Murphy, Wall Street Journal Senior Editor, CFO Journal. Quick break, and we'll be right back.
Since 1997, David Holland has built a solid reputation in our local community as an independent financial advisor. Just as important, Holland Financial's professional team has grown to include 3 experienced certified financial planners, a tax accountant, an attorney, 3 chartered financial consultants, accredited asset management specialist, and certified annuity specialist. Our attentive and professional staff gives prompt and accurate service to our 300-plus clients. If you're looking for financial advice you can count on today and for many years to come, call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us online at planstronger.com. Do you have financial questions you'd like answered on this show? Send them to questions@planstronger.com. You will remain anonymous.
And we're back with Maxwell Murphy, Wall Street Journal Senior Editor, CFO Journal. And you know, one of the things that strikes me, Max, about all of this is just how, you know, we talked about the global economy and with currencies, including the China currency, where they're starting to allow or will ultimately allow that to really the price or exchange rate to be set by the market. You've got the potential for massive amounts of capital to flow across, you know, borders and just, you know, before things ultimately, if they can settle down and we get to that, you know, maybe quasi Star Trek common currency, that there can be some real serious upheavals just with the capital moving around so quickly. And where if enough people get spooked, of course, we saw this with, you know, Greece and Cyprus. I mean, you know, there are some real shocks to the system that could occur as we move forward. And it's just, it's going to be interesting to see how the overall, you know, the powers to be, if you will be able to manage that.
Well, you're right. And I am not an economist, and I do not profess to know that I'm right about this, but I've traveled down the avenue in my head. And the thing that always it comes back to, like, I mean, cause I assume that you and your viewers and, I mean, your listeners and me here in New York, we're sort of focused on the U.S. economy and U.S. companies. So if we narrow it down to that, no U.S. company is going to bring cash back from a low-tax jurisdiction to the high one. But at the same time, every U.S. company, or almost everyone that hasn't been visited by Carl Icahn, is trying to, or except the ones that haven't been visited by him, are trying to pay out dividends and buybacks. But you must do that out of U.S. cash.
Right.
So there is this sort of weird push-pull. But at the end of the day, that's a cliche, but at the end of the day, no company is going to send money overseas on purpose, but it's also not going to bring it back on purpose because of our onerous tax rate.
So leave the
and
money.
And I don't know how tax reform happens, but it's got to.
Well, it will be, and what will probably drive it is, you know, you made an excellent point, Max. You leave the money over there, you report the profits here, and you have your balance sheet item, but the cash doesn't move. And then what do you do to be able to do the buyback or the dividends? You already know the answer. You borrow debt cheaply at really low interest rates. So it'll become an issue, or the push will come for that tax reform when the companies are no longer able to borrow at a rate that makes it make sense.
Well, absolutely. Well, and borrowing the debt to fund the dividend or buyback, that's almost like, you know, 101. But, I mean, we see companies that are able to round trip their funds through short-term intercompany loans between subsidiaries. It's like, you know, robbing Peter to pay Paul, but Paul has the money back before Peter knows it's not there. It's a lot of games that probably shouldn't have to be played, and people like Senator Carl Levin don't want them to be played, but if the system is going to be the way the system is, then the games have to be played, or else you fire your CFO for not doing their fiduciary duty.
Yeah.
You know, it's like this weird circuitous route of we're all messed up.
Well, I tell you what, Max, we'll have to have you back to come back and talk just about taxes. So
anytime.
Yeah. Maxwell Murphy, Wall Street Journal Senior Editor, CFO Journal. Max, thank you as always for a spirited conversation.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Today's edition of Real Money Radio has been brought to you by Holland Financial, conveniently located on Granada Boulevard in Ormond Beach. Could you benefit from a one-on-one confidential conversation with David Holland, or would you like a second opinion to make sure that you're on the right track? Call Holland Financial at 671-PLAN or visit us at planstronger.com to schedule your no-obligation consultation. David looks forward to discussing the financial issues that matter most to you. The host of Real Money Radio, David Holland, is a certified financial planner with over 20 years of experience. And because David provides advice to clients on a daily basis, his hyperactive compliance department wants us to tell you that David Holland is an investment advisor representative of Holland Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm. He offers insurance and annuity products through Holland Insurance Services. Commentary given during this radio program should not be considered investment, insurance, tax, or legal advice. Views expressed concerning specific securities are not an offer to buy or sell. Investment advice and planning services can only be given after an analysis of an individual situation and only where Holland Advisory Services is registered or exempt from registering. Real Money Radio is produced by Holland Productions.